Today we're talking about the section Self-Sufficient Too Early from the TMS book Pathways to Pain Relief. We have our awesome team of co-hosts here. Bruce, who is here, or Kirby, or Eric, and Enjoy. And just a reminder, this is a peer discussion group where we share our own experiences and is not intended to treat or diagnose any medical conditions. So if you need medical advice, make sure you see a doctor. Bruce, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm Bruce MC. That's the handle I use on the TMS support forum. And as I let the cat out of the bag, we're here only as support. None of us are licensed psychotherapists or physicians who can diagnose or prescribe. But we're here to support, provide support to those suffering from TMS pain or other PPD symptoms. And today our topic, the topic du jour, is a chapter from Frances Somer Anderson and Eric Sherman's Pathways to Pain Relief entitled Self-Sufficient Too Early. And I might add that Anderson and Sherman were are Dr. John E. Sarno's chief principal psychotherapists. They are the people that Sarno would refer his patients to for additional psychotherapy if the small classes and reading were insufficient to cure their symptoms. And the title of this chapter is Self-Sufficient Too Early. And it's about a Ms. T who began seeing Dr. Anderson for an initial consultation about 1 month after her 80th birthday. So she was kind of a late TMS bloomer. She's married, a mother of six, and after a variety of jobs, became executive director, then president of a large New York City foundation, where she'd maintained that post for the last 30 years. Her TMS had began about 4 years ago, after being diagnosed, a short time after being diagnosed with colon cancer. The first symptoms were drop foot that caused her to trip a lot. There was a neurosurgeon who diagnosed her as having lumbar stenosis and urged her to have a operation. I believe she did have the operation, and her recovery was uneventful. However, then she began to develop pain in her left buttocks, and she went to another doctor. And the new doctor recommended spinal fusion and various titanium implants, but he also added that her age, 79 at the time, it put her in the high-risk category. Well, she thanked the doctor. She went to see the doctor with her husband of 36 years, she thanked the doctor and departed, saying that she needed to think about what he had told us. At this point, Ms. T's primary care physician recommended Dr. Sarno's books, Healing Back Pain, The Divided Mind. I don't know which ones they were. And subsequently, she saw Dr. Sarno in early, that would be June 2005. And when they talked, when she met him, they talked, and he examined her and gave her a diagnosis of TMS. He told me that previous alarming diagnoses from neurosurgeons were to be set aside. The cause of my pain was acute unconscious feelings of repressed anger. He went on to draw me a picture of a reservoir, as he called it, explaining that the first third of it was filled with childhood hurts and disappointments, The second one-third was filled with anger and dismay at the vicissitudes of life. In my case, it was now overflowing with the shock of recent cancer diagnosis and the concomitant fear of aging and mortality. Throughout her psychotherapeutic sessions with Dr. Anderson, Ms. L emphasized the fact of her, all of the losses that had occurred in her life, all of the deaths. The second third was filled with anger and dismay at the vicissitudes of life. In my case, it was now overflowing with the shock of recent cancer diagnosis and the concomitant fear of aging and mortality. I imagine at her age of 80. But the thing that Dr. Sarno emphasized was that all of these angers, hurts, and the rages were cumulative. They had built up over an entire lifetime. And she attended, Ms. T attended the lectures at the Rusk Institute and did her home study writing. But despite all my diligence, the debilitating pain continued. I was unable to walk a city block without frequent stops to allow the pain to subside. Often I held onto the side of buildings to support myself. Painkillers didn't work. So she assumed that there must be a psychological origin. Dr. Sarno, after several weeks of reporting no improvement, Dr. Sarno suggested to Ms. L that psychotherapy was in order. And she began seeing Dr. Anderson. Based on her understanding of TMS when I first met her, when Dr. Anderson first met her, Ms. T stated, "I fit the profile. High expectations and low self-confidence, perfectionistic, need to be liked, and then I have a stiff upper lip. I don't show my emotions." She learned repression at an early age. There's one incident where her father, her late father, where she was sitting on the lap of her late father as a girl, and her father had a burning cigarette in his hand, and the cigarette burned into her leg, and she still did not reveal the fact that she was hurting. She had become such a successful repressor. And then there's an episode when she was six, where her front tooth was knocked out in a taxi collision, resulting in her having to wear a false tooth until she was 18. I was embarrassed throughout my childhood and fearful that my false tooth would be discovered, like there's some kind of tragic flaw that she's walking around with. And one of the interesting quotes is that there was a pattern of nobody being there. She was raised by chauffeurs, nurses, nannies. My care was in the hands of others at the same time that her family moved from place to place. But the real quote that is the kicker that summarizes her predicament that Dr. Anderson notes is that praise for accomplishments in school, in sports, etc., was absent. Criticism for anything less than excellent performance prevailed. Unflattering comments were made about my appearance in those days, saying anything positive was seen as spoiling children. But her father continued this pattern of negative comparison too. Her father had his apartment lined with pictures of all of the great beauties he'd dated. And then he, at the same time, he told Ms. T, her father told Ms. T, that she was unattractive. And she had this recurrent pattern of nobody being there for her while she was engaged in this itinerant kind of life with no real fixed abode. And of course, as a result of these negative comparisons, she married at 19 and made a resolution to be the world's best mother. And her mother was involved totally in her career. And Dr. Anderson told her that a mother's attention is lifeblood, an essential nutrient for a small child. My mother's attention had been limited, probably causing me to repress emotions. I began to understand during psychotherapy that independence had been thrust upon me at a very early age. And that's the result is the title that summarizes it, the title of a chapter, Self-Sufficient Too Early. And she continues to improve as she sees Dr. Anderson. She reported that I had been aware of difficulties in my childhood, but not my feelings about them. She had to stuff all of her feelings about her relationship with her parents. After 10 weeks of psychotherapy, she comes to the conclusion, one, I didn't have a home. Two, I was emotionally neglected. And three, my mother had her own problems. And that summarizes the background behind the origins of her TMS symptoms. And also the pattern of death and loss in her life. Against this background of no fixed home and then the indifferent parents, I think Ms. L's case reminded me of Winston Churchill and how he was carted off to all of these private schools away from his professional beauty mother and his high-profile parliamentarian dad. And he was always writing home for them to pay attention to him. But they wouldn't because they were involved in their private life. And, of course, he developed what he called his black beast later in life, this great depression that haunted him, particularly at Yalta, different times when he had to meet with Uncle Stalin. But, Ms. L also has this tidy theme running throughout her life, too. She needs to be perfect all the time. No doubt to compensate for this lack of parental praise. Studying Mrs. L's case is like a classic study in the origin of perfectionism as a method of compensating for loss and indifference around you. She had to be perfect. She had to be the best mother. So at this point, I'd like to throw the conversation open to the various participants. What do you guys think about Ms. L and her predicament?
You know something, Bruce? Somehow I've managed to study the wrong person. Who is this lady? What is her name?
Ms. L. She's an 80-year-old.
Actually, I've read her story, but I'm sorry. I got a little panicked towards the end because I was trying to find it on my Kindle version of the book. What exactly?
I'm sorry.
I
think it's Miss T.
Miss T. Yeah.
The letters get difficult. So for those of you who have not read the book, Dr. Anderson refers to most of the people she talks about just as Ms. or Mr. and then the first letter. So it gets very difficult to kind of differentiate between the two or three people she talks about. But great summary, Bruce. I thought.
I think I think it begins, Enjoy, on location 2377 of the Kindle edition.
Okay, because I was studying Mr. L, not Ms. T. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'll find the darn thing. Can anybody tell me what exactly her problem is? Not the whole version, the, like, short sentence version. What's bugging Mrs. T?
Well, the title, Self-Sufficient Too Early, she had parents who were elsewhere. And a dad who didn't praise her, that constantly... Well, I think it's like an example of what Dr. Sarno would call qualified love. She didn't receive any praise whatsoever. Unless she was the very best. Otherwise, there were negative comparisons made, both about her, how she looked, and what she was doing.
So in other words, just basically what's bothering everybody.
Well, she had deferred for a long, long time before symptoms... the symptoms began to manifest. Not until
Bruce, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Somebody needs to mute. There's a huge racket going on. I cannot hear you.
You read my thoughts, Enjoy. So I'm actually going to mute everyone except for Bruce and Enjoy for the moment. All right?
Okay,
Somebody's typing.
Just a second. Continue.
Okay. Bruce? Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I guess what I want to ask is what is it that differentiates Mrs. T from the rest of us? Do you think, would you mind addressing that? Because that's what escapes me. That sounds like life to me.
By immersing herself in work for so long, and being perfect, she deferred all of these childhood issues until they became pressing at the time of this cancer operation, when she had to finally face mortality, I think, at 80. She had deferred for a long, long time until the symptoms began to manifest. I think it's like Dr. Sarno says, there's a beaker, and at some point it overflows. She finally reached the point where TMS symptoms began to manifest because she'd reached the absolute limit of her repression.
So
sometimes that occurs at the time of a divorce. Sometimes it occurs when there's a traffic accident. Sometimes it occurs when there's a death in the family. But this had finally reached the point where she could no longer repress it. She was very good at repressing when she sat on her father's lap and felt the cigarette burning and then demonstrated no pain. She was able to repress it that much. She was very good at it. But finally, when enough deaths had occurred and her own mortality came into question as she approached her 80th birthday, then the beaker began to overflow. That's why I say she was a late bloomer in the TMS game. She'd been really good at repressing for a long, long time. With the alcoholic father that she cared for as he died, and with the mother who was indifferent and aloof, she had it all on her shoulders. And she did a very good job at it for years, being a perfect mother, as she says. But finally, it got to the point where she could no longer evade these issues because she was getting to be 80. And
okay,
she
well, what I
sick.
Was trying to figure out was what's the difference between Mrs. T and me, right? Because that's why we're studying this, is to understand more about TMS and understand more about our relationship to it. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, so what? Isn't this just life? I mean, but I guess what the case history is saying is that this is TMS life, and this lady is a particularly strong example of someone who had enormous inner resources, and she repressed like crazy for a long, long time until she absolutely couldn't anymore at around the age of 80. So that's very instructive, actually. It's a very good, very good story.
Yeah, it's now or later, isn't it, with TMS? Some people
Are
better at repressing for longer periods of time than others until
and
they start developing PPD symptoms.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have PPD symptoms that we weren't ever aware of before we had TMS. Now I look back and I can see where I developed asthma at the time my parents were getting divorced or trying to get divorced when I was six. And I always thought, oh, I developed asthma because there was a lot of dust in the house. But I realize now that there was a direct connection between the allergies developing and my parents fighting. But that's what TMS has taught me. Well, I think you always think it's your fault until you start analyzing these things and you see it's a lot of externals operating on you. Stressors, as Dr. Sardo would call them. And you can see how she wanted to get away, too. Remember when she wanted to join the women's air transport? When Mrs. T, during World War II, wanted to leave? And that was one way where women could express themselves. That was one of the areas where women could actually enter into the war effort directly. Otherwise, they were pretty much banned from the service. So she was really trying to step out and be independent. That was quite a bold step.
Bruce? Can I suggest that we ask Joy if she is relating to any of this? Because I know that I'm an older person. I think that those of us who are older might have a real connection to this. And I'm just wondering if Joy feels any connection to Ms. T's story.
Yes, I do. Am I on mute?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yes.
We can all hear you.
Okay. This is Joy. I tried to be perfect in order to be noticed and appreciated while growing up. In other words, I was a hospital volunteer, a candy striper, a Sunday school teacher. I didn't do these things really because I wanted to. I just thought then people would notice me and think I'm a good person.
Yeah. So do you mind us asking when it started to fall apart for you, when it became too much?
1999, June 1999.
Right. Wow.
I had reached my threshold.
So you had some kind of pain at that time that you found out was...
Excruciating, debilitating.
Did you know soon after that it was TMS, or was it...
No,
are you
still I didn't discover that until... February 28, 2012, during a consultation with Dr. Sarno.
Right, right. I remember we talked about this on the chat.
Yes.
I just wanted to let other people know. So you went through a long period of time suffering without realizing that it was actually stuff you were repressing that was at least adding to it.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Did Dr. Sarno... give you his classic lecture on the beaker? the reservoir of rage.
I had a 3-hour consultation. I didn't know he was about to retire, and I made an appointment last February of 2012 for a consultation. He spent 3 hours with me, and then I said, when will I see you again? He said, oh, see you in my office in April. Then when I called in April, I discovered he retired, and then I understood why he spent so long with me during the consultation, but he didn't tell me he was going to retire. But that's when I realized he had the correct diagnosis, because prior to that, I was diagnosed with spinal arachnoiditis, chronic degenerative disc disease, spinal stenosis, and none of them made sense to me.
The whole kit and caboodle, all
yes.
of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know that
Dr. Sarno, in his lecture to Mrs. P, said he told her that the cause of my pain was acute unconscious feelings of repressed anger. He went on to draw a picture of a reservoir, as he called it. And in Mrs. T's case, it was now overflowing with the shock of recent cancer diagnosis and the concomitant fear of aging and mortality. Dr. Sarno emphasized to her that the unconscious is childish and timeless, and the angers, hurts, and rages of a lifetime are cumulative. But this cancer diagnosis and fear of aging and mortality seems to be the trigger that brought on Ms. T's symptoms, at least according to Dr. Sarno in this study, in this session. So I wondered, what were your triggers specifically? Where was it that you crossed the line and it became too much?
I lost my daughters.
Yeah, a loss, right? That's one of the big ones. Things can go along the way they always have for a long, long time, and long as the principles are there that are creating the triangle or whatever it is that's allowing you to that's causing you to repress. But you take somebody out of the equation with a death, and then the mechanism doesn't work as well. It gets out of equilibrium, doesn't it? It achieves
yes.
disequilibrium, and then
yes.
something's got to give.
Yes.
I know that as long as my parents were alive, I continued in the same, if you want to call it, Oedipal triangle, overachieving and overachieving year after year after year to please them. But then when my father died, my father was still alive in my mother, since my mother had all of the family records in her head. So really, grandpa hadn't died, my aunt hadn't died, my uncle hadn't died, my cousin hadn't died, my father hadn't died, as long as my mother was alive. So the mechanism continued to function. But when she died, they all died. So there I was.
Wow.
And that's when the symptoms began. And that's loss, like the loss of your daughter.
Yes. Both daughters.
Both daughters.
Yes.
And how did that occur, if you would be so kind as to share that with us? What were the circumstances?
It was a car accident.
Oh, yeah, so AB, it was like, what do they call it? Ends and non-ends, existence, non-existence, and
right.
sudden and traumatic.
Yeah.
Not like a long lingering illness. It was like one day you woke up and they just weren't there.
Right.
And you had to come to terms with that rather rapidly.
Yes.
And is that when the symptoms started?
Yes.
How long did it take between the traumatic event of the car accident and the onset of symptoms?
I would say about 6 weeks.
6 weeks, yeah. It was about 6 months after my mother's death, but it was a symbolic event, inheriting her house. that is when the symptoms started for me, because that was when it was a fact, you know. That's when the responsibility was shifted onto my shoulders. So how did you first notice, how did the symptoms begin? What was the onset like? Miss T had drop foot to begin with, right after the time of the diagnosis, or shortly after the operation, I forget.
One minute I was okay, and the next minute I was in excruciating pain, and I didn't injure myself, I didn't have an accident. I just was in excruciating pain sitting in the car.
And it was like, what do they call that, catastrophic acute
yes.
lower back pain?
Yes.
Where it floors you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. See, mine went on for quite a few weeks as sciatica, and I even thought I'd pulled a muscle while I was running. And then one night I couldn't feel my knee. It was numb. So I went home and I said, I'll give it a good stretch. And bango, catastrophic. Just like I had to crawl out of the backyard up to my bed, and I said, something happened. You know, I'm hurt. So what happened after that? What happened after the attack? Where you were referred to conventional physicians?
First I went to chiropractors for manipulations. Then
yeah.
I went for acupuncture for treatments. Then I went to physical therapy. And then I had fusion surgery. Then I had a morphine pain pump. Then I had spinal cord stimulator. Then I had more fusion surgery. Then I had a plate installed in my back. Then I was on narcotics, anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxers.
Wow.
I bought an inversion table hung upside down. I bought a custom-made mattress. I bought a jacuzzi. Nothing worked.
Yeah,
nothing
you
worked.
Really, you went through almost, it sounds like, everything under the sun.
That's what Dr. Sarno says. People don't come to him until they've exhausted all other available means. So you have to make a decision for PPD or for mind-body diagnosis. Once you've exhausted all the physical solutions.
Well, first of all, it's a terrible loss, and I'm sure all of us are very moved by both the enormity of that loss and your willingness to share that with us here and share your story with us here. So thank you for that. Both of you also groups can do as well. I was wondering if anyone else wanted to comment or if you wanted to, chime in here. And,
I just wanted to say that I think that Joy's story is amazing from another point of view, and that is that she had the sense to realize there was something off about all these diagnoses she was receiving, that she had, there's quite a bit of inner strength there and inner awareness, because a lot of us go through years and years and years absolutely believing the diagnosis and trying all these physical therapies when in fact it turns out that it is TMS in the long run. I think people are lucky if they ever learn that it's TMS. I think the world is full of people who are having these agonizing problems and nothing's working for them, at least not for long. So that was the first thing I thought, Joy, when I heard your story, is that, wow, you knew right from the beginning there was something not quite right.
I did. And when
final this and,
the doctor said, no, I took an MRI and you have herniated discs. I said, but I didn't have an accident or injure myself. It just wasn't adding up.
Well, Dr. Sarno says that herniated discs and bulging discs are part of the normal aging process and are not predictive. They're not causal. They're not causing the pain. But it seems like all of the conventional physicians, including chiropractors, will tell you that this is pushing on this and thereby causing this. It's very mechanistic, and it plays into our post-Cartesian dualistic worldview, where we nicely separate things of the mind and the spirit from things of the body and the material world. It takes a long time to see the connection between the mind and the body that's operative in your symptoms.
Well, the first doctor I went to was my primary care physician, and my family doctor said, I started to cry, and he said to me, go to a psychiatrist. So I went to a psychiatrist, and I thought like I could talk, and all he did was write me two prescriptions, one for antidepressants and one for anxiety. And I said to him, well, isn't that like putting a Band-Aid on cancer? I mean, don't I need to talk through all this? But he said, I have patients in the waiting room. I don't have time for all this nonsense. And he just wanted to drug me up. And I thought, well, isn't it better if I just release the emotions instead of taking all these drugs to numb me? I wasn't in agreement with any of them, but I thought, well, they're the authorities, and what do I know? But I think I was right, and they were wrong.
I think this is what you're underscoring is a problem in modern psychiatry, where people are drugged for symptoms, and there's never any talk therapy or any other kind of group therapy prescribed for dealing with the underlying causes of the emotions. It's like someone is depressed and the physician will just write a script for Prozac.
Yeah.
And then they'll walk around with a smile on their face.
I know.
But deep inside, there's something wrong. They're depressed for a reason. Loss, like the death of your children, or death of a parent, or a divorce, or loss of money, but they just don't want to deal with that kind of thing. They've got it all down to chemistry.
Yes.
You don't feel good because you don't have appropriate serotonin levels in your brain, whereas if you took a two-week backpacking trip in the Sierra, your serotonin level would nicely improve.
Right.
Because you'd get away from the problem, right? You'd get in touch with reality. And you wouldn't have these cobwebs of the mind coming from your environment. But I notice at the end of Ms. T's therapy, she mentions to Dr. Anderson what positive improvements have occurred. And she says, I learned how to better avoid stress and the inevitable pressures one faces as a parent, step-parent, and grandparent of a very large family and in my work. And then she showed me how angry feelings need not mean an absence of love, even suggesting that I simply say no when too much is piled on me. And you can see in her biography that this was what she was doing, was taking it all on her shoulders. Just due to the fact that she was raised by governesses, chauffeurs, nannies, and never had had these parents who were elsewhere, who were otherwise engaged. Her father with his alcoholism, and no doubt egomania attached to his trophy girlfriends that he kept his wall lined with. Think of how that would make you feel if you went to see Dad and
wow.
You were the daughter, and here's the pictures of all these great beauties he dated, and then he tells you you don't measure up.
He had a priority set of order. He had misplaced loyalties.
And then her mother was totally involved in her work. Sort of like Winston Churchill's mother being a professional beauty.
Yeah.
And never coming to see him at the private school where he kept trying to achieve and earn her love. She was otherwise engaged. Winnie was just a problem. I think you see this in a lot of little rich kids, like I think of Greenwich, Connecticut, or the Hamptons, upstate New York, where everybody is raised by their governess or their nanny or someone at school or some pecking order at the country club. But the parents are otherwise engaged.
They're preoccupied. The parents are preoccupied and the kids wind up in drug rehab.
Yeah, this was what I saw over and over again with kids from Beverly Hills and Greenwich who went to exclusive private liberal arts schools. They overachieved and they overachieved and they came to school with scholarships and so on. And by junior year, oh my God, they jumped the rail and they totally descended into drugs and promiscuity. And they were busy flunking out or just getting straight C's to get by. But usually looked at their family life and the parents were otherwise engaged. They had a lot of mommies and daddies and a lot of cousins, and they never got any attention from their parents. So they were set back on their own resources.
Well, nowadays most parents are divorced and the mother's working because she's not getting child support, and so there's nobody to discipline the kids.
Yeah, well, as we move toward the single-parent mom breadwinner as the norm, I think we'll see more and more of this.
I think there's more and more blended families.
As fascinating as this is, unfortunately, we are almost out of time, and I would like to wrap this up.
One thing that Mrs. T learns is that the pain that she experienced, the TMS pain, was a substitute for feelings, a distraction, and that it can occur on anniversaries of traumatic events. And
yeah.
I think that's one of the conclusions that are reached.
That is a perfect conclusion. Next week, same time, we will be discussing the next section in Anderson's in Pathways to Pain Relief, which I believe is called Speaking Up for Myself. I can certainly relate to that title. I thank you again, everyone. I can leave this call open if people want, but I will stop the recording now. And we can go over to the chat at www.tmswiki.org/chat.
Thank you.